installed doors and automatic openers since 1959. Champaign Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer warranties on many products. 367-8121.
The last of slow-moving showers and thunderstorms from northern portions of Illinois and Indiana sank south here into central Illinois this morning. Cold front moved from northeast to southwest. The progress of the frontal boundary will slow, allowing temperatures in portions of northwest and central Illinois to still warm to the upper 70s and 80s this afternoon. North of the cold front, the northeast Illinois and northwest Indiana lakeshore will likely remain in the 50s through the remainder of the day, with upper 60s and 70s away from the lake. There's a small chance for showers and thunderstorms to redevelop this afternoon. Low probabilities of showers and some thunderstorms will continue tonight and Saturday, as the stationary frontal boundary remains draped over the area. Under partly sunny skies, temperatures will be in the 70s and 80s on Saturday, with the warmest temperatures and highest humidity south of the boundary from northwest Illinois near Sterling to northern Indiana south of the Kankakee River. East winds will keep the Illinois lakefront cooler, but again, we'll see warm and humid conditions and rain here in the forecast for central Illinois and central Indiana, as a weak low-pressure system and cold front will eventually move across the area into next week. In Champaign-Urbana today, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, otherwise mostly cloudy with a high around 83. Tonight, mostly cloudy, more showers and thunderstorms possible, the low 65. Tomorrow and tomorrow night, still a slight chance for more showers and thunderstorms throughout the day and night. Partly sunny Saturday with the high again near 83, partly cloudy Saturday night with the low about 62. On Sunday, partly sunny, a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms with a high 82. And showers and thunderstorms are likely Sunday night and Monday with Sunday night's low 61, Monday's high 78. At that point, we're going to experience some cooler conditions with highs next week in the upper 60s to low 70s, lows in the mid-50s, and dropping to the upper 40s at midweek. Take a look at temperatures around the region at this hour. In Danville, 75 degrees, scattered showers in Decatur at 71. In Mattoon, mostly cloudy conditions, 72 degrees. In Springfield, clear skies and 70. At Willard Airport in Champaign, scattered clouds at 73 degrees. Winds out of the west at 16 miles per hour, gusting up to 24. The relative humidity, 73%. Barometric pressure, 30 inches even and rising. And Outsider Studios and Friends Plaza in Urbana, it's 72 degrees at 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Jason, is this music, this sort of like a little bit of a Big Band Friday from days gone by? No? We ought to do that. We ought to do that again sometime. Oh, well. Hydraulic fracturing, a process used to collect and extract natural gas, has been around for decades. But how and where it's done today is new, and it has worried some about what it means for air and water quality. Several drilling companies have moved into southern Illinois to extract natural gas by using horizontal fracking deep underground beneath shale. They could begin within a month. David Morse from the Illinois State Geological Survey assesses the state of fracking with Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers.
I think in certain parts of the country, it is a boom. Places like Texas, like Arkansas, like Pennsylvania are seeing a boom that they never expected. You can see the competition from the companies because they're paying huge lease fees to the mineral owner. And so it's a very competitive business to get at these hydrocarbons.
Is it going to be a boom in Illinois?
Right now, I would say it's speculative. My geological work looking at the New Albany Shale, which I've been looking at for the last 10 years, suggests that there maybe is a reason why the boom has not started here 10 years ago. And I'm concerned that the shale has low porosity, low permeability, and fairly low gas content. And so I don't think it's as an attractive a target as we see in other areas. It's also shallower. And we find that the deeper formations with more pressure contain more gas. And so shallowness also contributes to less reserves per well.
Do you anticipate that the wells in the southern part of the state are going to be very productive?
We'll have to see. We don't have any large-scale massive fracs. We have some operators that have drilled vertical holes. They're still doing evaluation of the gas content in the shale and what the rock properties are of the shale. It may be because it's not buried that deep. It may not be a very brittle rock, and so it may not even be suitable for fracking.
Is there currently commercial production of oil and gas using fracking in Illinois?
Oh, there is production. In fact, between 10 and 30,000 wells in Illinois, vertical wells, have been fracked in the last 50 years. This is a conventional stimulation technique, and easily more than half the wells have this. But the difference is very small quantities of water and sand are used in the oil and gas wells, these conventional reservoirs. I'm talking about maybe 50,000 gallons of water or 100,000 gallons of water. And these massive fracs in Pennsylvania involve like 5 million gallons of water.
Now, some of the concerns over fracking that have been raised include contaminating water, destroying farmland, pumping harmful chemicals into the earth. How do we know what happens to the water and the chemicals that go with it?
Okay, about 20% of the water that's injected into the ground and the chemicals that go with it flow back to the surface. And it's industry's job to contain those fluids. They'll contain them either in steel tanks or in lined pits that then have to be disposed of. And this water is either reused in other oil and gas operations as required by federal regulation, or the water will be disposed of in a proper way in oil and gas waste disposal wells.
Now, I understand there is a percentage that doesn't get disposed of.
It stays in the rock formations.
Does that have any sort of harmful effect on the environment?
Not if it's 5,000 feet underground. There are so many layers. It's not connected whatsoever to the aquifers. And the fracturing process does not create fractures that come anywhere near the surface aquifers.
The 5,000 feet underground, any chance those could come back up to the surface, go to the surrounding bodies of water?
You have to remember that these wells have been cased with steel pipe and cement that cements the steel pipe in place. There's a surface conductor pipe that is drilled through the aquifers and cemented in place. Down within that wellbore, there'll be either one or two additional layers of steel and cement that go down through the earth and through the borehole. These provide the primary seal to prevent fluids from deep in the rock formations from ever reaching the surface. And these are the standard procedures that have been involved in the oil patch for drilling regular oil wells. I mean, horizontal wells or fracked shale wells are no different. One concern is whether the cement is perfectly sealing or not. And so I think it would be well served to test these wells before you do the fracturing and make sure that the cement will hold.
If those fluids were to leak and make it to the surface or to nearby bodies of water, I mean, what would happen? I mean, what kind of, would there be side effects? Would there be health concerns?
EPA looks at oil and gas waste as a relatively low-level toxic waste. The chemicals that have gone into the well, many of them are household cut-type products like disinfectants, detergents, and so on, that are used in water treatment plants. They're used in health facilities and other things like that.
So another criticism that's been raised about fracking is that it can cause earthquakes. Is that the case?
I think that's very, very overstated. Fracturing will create a displacement of rock in the earth, but it's of an earthquake magnitude, if you will, of minus one or zero. And these are not detected by anyone on the surface, so will not cause any damage. A truck rumbling down the road would create more of a disturbance than anything at the well itself.
Legislation in the Illinois Senate would create standards for shale gas fracking. The measure introduced by State Senator Mike Frericks of Champaign would require drilling companies to provide detailed information about hydrofractured wells and the composition of fluids that they're using. Do you believe this measure will ease some of the concerns over fracking?
I think this is a good start. I think one additional measure in Frericks' bill is to require testing of the wells. And I think both public disclosure of what goes in the ground and testing to assure that the wells are not going to leak will help to provide some public comfort. I think what still remains is concerns about what happens to the fluids at the surface.
That's David Morse of the Illinois State Geological Survey. He spoke with Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers. The legislation in the Illinois General Assembly has passed the Senate and is now awaiting a vote in the Illinois House. Since October 2010, more than 100 bills across roughly 20 states have been introduced relating to hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. Federal prosecutors have charged nearly two dozen men in a string of pharmaceutical thefts in three states. The drugs included antidepressants and chemotherapy medications. One of the break-ins at a warehouse in Connecticut led to changes in the way companies handle security. From member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut, Craig LaMolt reports.
Two brothers were arrested and charged Thursday with cutting a hole in the roof of an Eli Lilly warehouse in Enfield, Connecticut in March of 2010. They allegedly made off with between $70 and $80 million worth of pharmaceuticals, including antidepressant and chemotherapy medications. Here's U.S. Attorney David Fine.
As far as we know, this brazen crime was the biggest theft in Connecticut history and in the history of the pharmaceutical industry countrywide.
Stolen drugs like these are sold overseas and can also be illegally sold to American distributors. These drugs were recovered by authorities. The break-in was noticed by the industry. Dan Burgess collects data on cargo thefts for FreightWatch International, a security firm that helps companies avoid this kind of thing. He says since the Eli Lilly incident, the number of pharmaceutical thefts has gone down.
Such a huge loss that was, you know, very, very public and very, very well known, I think really generated some motivation in a lot of companies to kind of close the door, you know, before the horses got out, so to speak.
Eli Lilly confirms they've taken additional steps since then to secure their cargo. Burgess says while the number of pharmaceutical cargo thefts was down last year, the overall number of cargo thefts was up 8%. For NPR News, I'm Craig LaMolt in Connecticut.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 4th of May, 2012. Peter Minuit landed on the island of Manhattan on this date in 1626. The Dutch had had a trading post on Governor's Island for a couple of years, and in 1625 they started building Fort Amsterdam on Manhattan. So Minuit arrived to find a small village already in place, more land being cleared. There were great stands of hickory, oak, and chestnut trees among the grasslands, the salt marshes of Manhattan. Times Square was a red maple swamp. A creek ran through Midtown. On the west side of the island, there was a cemetery, a small farm, an orchard, and two wealthy estates. Most of the houses were built along the East River. The main street was an old Indian path running from the southern tip of the island north to what is now City Hall Park. First, it was called Herestraat, Gentleman Street, but eventually it came to be known as Breedeweg, which became the name we know it by today, Broadway. The first Freedom Ride set off on this date, 1961. 13 activists, recruited by the Congress of Racial Equality, to ride buses throughout the South to test the laws on segregation. An interracial group, most of them college students, set off from Washington, D.C. on their way to New Orleans, the white riders sitting in the back of the bus and the black in the front. They encountered little resistance in the Upper South, but the Deep South was another matter. In Alabama, they were met with baseball bats and guns, beatings, firebombs. They were put into prison, and they never made it to New Orleans. It's the birthday of David Gutterson, born in Seattle 1956, taught high school for many years, wrote about education and homeschooling, published a short story collection, but he's best known for his first novel, Snow Falling on Cedars. It was a big bestseller in 1994. and it's the birthday of the man who invented the piano as we know it, Bartolomeo Cristofori, born in Padua, Italy, 1655. He was hired by the Florentine court to take care of the harpsichords, on which, as you know, the strings are plucked, and Cristofori put hammers and dampers and a range of octaves onto the harpsichord model so that the hammers hit the strings so you could play loudly or softly depending on how hard you played the keys. It was called a pianoforte, meaning soft, loud, and then just a piano. One of Cristofori's original pianos is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. Here's a poem for today by Reed Whittemore, entitled The Lovers. Together they stand in the checkout line with their carton of raspberries. They are in love. They love raspberries.